Well, men are not necessary. Men are the scum of the earth. And in fact, men are such reprobates that it'd be better off if we all just offed ourselves. At least that's what I've been told over and over again by the culture. And let's talk about that today as Watch Your Culture Stray Further every day. This is part two of Women and the Bible. Jonathan Fiala here, sitting in the chair of host and also the chair of philosophy. And to my right, I got Miss Nikki. How's it going?
It's going good. Thank you.
Glad to have you there in the chair of theology.
Get up here closer so you can hear me.
So for those of you who did not tune in last week, we did a biblical framework and layout. This is actually Miss Nikki's baby. Miss Nikki and Mr. Charlie, they both have worked really hard on it. So, but nevertheless, I was still asked to run this one. So
that's right.
I'm glad to be here. Taking the job as man, pushing and leading and taking responsibility for any failures, but all the credit goes to the woman. To my left, from the chair of philosophy, over to my left, to the chair of culture, I got Melissa. How's it going?
It's going good.
Glad to have you there. And the chair of culture, Mr. Steve.
Here, dude.
He's boxing.
Here, and I am being politically incorrect.
In the chair of politics, downstream of culture.
Outside the box, man. Hanging in.
To his left, we got Charlie.
Just show me the money.
In the economic chair, dealing with the value. By the way, I think culture has devalued women in the past. Right now, it is certainly devaluing men. Just to recap from last week, we are going to go ahead and play this again because this clip is still very relevant. Go ahead and pull up the clip from The View, Mr. Producer. Rye, the producer guy, as always, producing. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Rye.
Go ahead and roll it.
Producer guy.
Make sure that the mic is switched over to the video, and let's go.
And that is Guy.
You're the best.
So there's this clip going viral online of a dozen women being asked the following question. Do we need men? Most answered very quickly, no. And only one said she thought women needed a man in their lives. Only one. But when men were asked a similar question, do we need women, most of them said yes. So why do you think that is?
Because men are useless. I mean, love it. And by the way, I want to differentiate between straight men and gay men, because I think I would die without gay men. Nobody can gossip like gay men. Nobody can help you accessorize like gay men. Nobody can help you keep you from doing harm to yourself like gay men. But with the exception of somebody like Steve, I think Steve is very self-sufficient.
That's Joy's husband.
But like my husband, it takes a village.
So hang on a second.
To make sure that
just a minute there. So she thinks men are useless and that the only ones that are useful are gay men. But she's
that says
married.
That says two very important things about her father. Keep going.
But yet she's married. So is she married to a gay man?
No. No.
I mean, she's
contradicting herself.
If you listen to what she's saying, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Keep rolling. There's more juice to squeeze here. But you're right, Steve.
Emaciated, starving, and living in his own filth. He can,
really?
You know.
Yeah.
What a respectful woman.
But you guys feel you guys are married to people that are more.
I have Handy Manny at home. he fixes everything. When things go bump in the night, he's the one that goes downstairs. When there's a bug to be exterminated, he does the extermination.
Nope.
When there is something to be fixed, he fixes it. He throws out the trash
Still
and he throws
no.
out the recyclables. I enjoy all the man stuff.
So
he
my.
Does
but that, wait a second. I know what you're going to say. But wait. She's really talking about a servant. Let's face
no,
it.
No, she's not.
It's a handyman.
Well yeah, she is.
Oh, she is, I think.
Oh, it's a handyman with benefits.
We do not have, well, but the things that you're describing.
And a sex toy.
You could pay somebody to do that.
Yes.
We're not talking about that. What about the inner life of a man? That's what this is about.
I need my man 3 to 4 times a week. And
also as a toy.
Yep.
No. That's
the
a toy.
Rest of the time I need a wife because I've always said
everyone
that
needs a wife.
No, I tease Vicky, my producer, in the morning. I was like, if you'd like to join Max and I, not in that way, but like Vicky and I could kill it as a household runners. Like we would be laughing, giggling, doing all.
It's
the things
because you're worthless as a woman. Sorry, keep. Thank you, Mr. Producer. It's having a hard time loading. That conversation goes on. Link in the description, as always, if you want to check it out. Melissa, I know that you have a bit to say.
Just as painful the second time around.
Just as painful the second
time.
But like, how do their husbands feel whenever they watch this?
Cue up the next clip. Do we need men? And look, this is to just focus on. Yep. So just refresh the page. Scroll up and refresh. Make sure you're on the correct one. Yep. And so.
I'm so psyched. I was wasting all my words somewhere else anyway.
Yeah, buddy. Go ahead and exit out of that one. Okay. I think the internet is going down on us. That's Kablooming. Unfortunate. Okay. Don't worry about it, Mr. Producer. Do we need men? 90% of farmers, approximately. 99% of carpenters. 80% of police. I think it's 85 or 89% of EMS, or firefighters, rather. You keep going on down the list. Military, 85% of the military is men. Do we need men? Yes. Do we need women? We need each other.
Yep.
We need each other. But I think that we've really, like last week we talked about this, how the Bible has gotten this bad reputation because of Christians. I once told a friend who was, you know, ragging on Christianity as quote unquote a death cult. And he was, you know, nagging Christianity. I said, well, you know, Christianity has a problem. God's worst PR nightmare are the people who call themselves by his name. We definitely have done a bad job as a church representing the ideas that were laid forth in the commands in the Bible. But what are your thoughts, Miss Nikki, as someone who's been married for 40 years?
Almost 40.
Almost May, 40.
May
in May.
40 years, yeah.
Ooh, congratulations.
Yep. Oh, all right.
What are your thoughts as someone who's been married coming up on 40 years on the feeling du jour concerning the male part of the population?
I've had this conversation with Charlie multiple times. I really am concerned of the lack of masculinity in our young people, in our society. It really disturbs me, to be honest with you.
Well, it's become common. And so if you have kids in the room, this is not the podcast for them necessarily. There are men who are basically being cucked. And what I mean by that is cuckolded. Mm-hmm. They are being expected to allow they're supposed to put off their desires, even if they are married. They're supposed to allow this feminist quote unquote freedom, and it's all in the name of quote unquote liberation. But liberation to what? So that other men can partake of this. We're going to a society. Mark my words. We're headed towards the Brave New World scenario that Aldous Huxley put forth, where it is selfish of you to withhold your most intimate actions and parts from other people. We're headed towards that. And men are expected, who, by the way, are the ones historically who have always protected that. They're the ones who've always been the ones who were supposed to protect the sacredness of the family, the inner core. And what I see up there is that you have women who are talking about their husbands in a way that, frankly, if I was dating a woman and she spoke like that about me,
it's off.
It's off. It's
over. It's off.
It's
done.
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 As it should be.
No more.
Yeah.
So I'm out with this.
Your thoughts on that whole situation, Melissa, on The View, and that look at men.
It kills me, honestly, because men deserve so much better than what we are giving them. And
Mr. Producer says thank you.
But it's, you know, and it pains me just that, you know, these, I was talking to call them girls, because real women will not speak about their husbands or boyfriends in that way. These children, more or less, These men don't deserve to be
well, and
like that.
What we talked about earlier was they have fathers, they have brothers, they have sons, they have cousins. I mean, you're referring to all of them in that one pot. No, we don't need you. I don't need my dad. I don't need my father. I don't need my brothers.
And it's like, I'm sorry, but I do need guys. I mean, whenever I travel, I tell my dad, this is where I'm at, this is where I'm going, so he knows, so he can protect me in case something happens. I've done this with you multiple times, where I'm like, I don't know what to do. This is like my car issue last
car advice.
Weeks ago.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's, I know he has that level of expertise or experience or that knowledge that I rely on him tons of times, as I rely on my dad, as I've relied on Charlie multiple times. So I need these men in my life.
Yeah.
And I can't speak to them like these people on The View do.
Well, and so part of the culture that's developed, and I know that this is part of the reason why you're excited to come on the podcast. We were talking off air before, and you had mentioned that you've noticed a change in chivalry, like even coming out of the grocery store. I don't know if you want to speak to that.
Sure. Like I was telling them earlier, I had, you know, 2 7-foot-long bookcases from IKEA that I was struggling, honestly, with getting onto the cart and then getting from the cart to my car. And I knew once I got it out the store, I'm going to be on my own. Well, I passed multiple men, employees, and multiple men just going in and out of the store, and not one person asked me, hey, do you need help? And as a small woman with these massive boxes, it was painfully obvious that I needed some sort of assistance.
How tall are you?
Barely 5 feet.
And you're also a CrossFitter.
And that's the only thing I think that allowed me to have that strength to get it, you know, get the job done, was I knew how to lift.
Yeah.
But my life would have been immensely easier if somebody just came up to me like, hey, do you need help? And it would have been an absolutely ideal.
I mean, even though you're jacked, just 10 years ago, even though you're this, you are a strong, you know, where are you on your PhD? You're halfway through?
Well, halfway through.
Okay. So strong PhD candidate, but you're saying it's actually nice if men are chivalrous and they actually offer to help.
Absolutely.
But the problem is that we've created this world where men are supposed they're supposed to help, which is actually correct. I believe that that's correct. There's an expectation that men are supposed to say, hey, you're carrying a 7-foot-long bookcase. You're trying to get it into your car. Do you want help? But we've also created this world of silence is violence, but also, you know, speaking to a woman is perverted. And so I'll tell you something. I have, on multiple occasions, offered to help people and gotten really weird responses back. And I've almost stopped doing it. Like, unless I see, like, the woman is struggling, I walk over and say, do you need any help? And by the way, even if they're like, no, I'm fine. Because they're also worried because they're always told men are predators. I don't think I give off those vibes necessarily. I don't think I look like a predator. Maybe I do. You know, to each their own. But, yeah, Steve, you don't count. I don't care about your opinion. Oh, okay. But people make those assumptions. And so as a guy, it's one of the most dangerous socially things for men to do is to reach out and say, do you need help? Because the assumption is immediately that you're stalking the woman. And so we've created this mm-hmm. very toxic environment mm-hmm. for men. But Steve, moving on, your thoughts on the women on The View, just reacting to that clip.
I think they're a joke, tell you the truth. They're violently feminist, as far as I'm concerned. And even though some of those women on there are married, they still don't like men. It's obvious.
They only like the provision of the moment.
Correct.
They'll take whatever they can from the relationship. They're consumers.
Exactly.
They consume the relationship.
That's all they're doing, is being a consumer of the relationship and taking all of the good things from it and not really appreciating too much what is the men are offering them. And that's what it is, what men do. They offer this. They don't give it because it's demanded. They offer it out of free will. Hmm. And that's what men do in a relationship.
It's what they should do.
It's what they should do. Yeah.
And exactly, Charlie, you're exactly right. And that's what they should do. And men offer these things just out of free will because that's what men do.
Yeah, it's part of the dynamic. And by the way, women typically, the natural state is men offer protection, provision, safe haven, and they offer comfort, right, for the woman, someone to talk to. And then in natural state, women offer comfort, okay, healing, stability, someone to be the grounding for the man's more active impulses. I'm not going to say violent. I'm not going to say constructive. But men need a ballast. Okay, and so that's what
and someone
you see in a relationship. And Abigail actually Adams.
Yes,
was John Adams's ballast. By the way, one of the only HBO shows I'll ever recommend. There was an HBO done on John Adams. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have.
It is such a good watch. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Add it to your list. Actually worth watching. And I believe this is taken from a letter. I could be wrong. Fact check me if you will. But John Adams, there's a scene where he grabs his wife. He's finally home from one of the congresses. And he goes, Abigail, you are my ballast. You are what keeps me steady in the stormy seas. There's so much going on. I need you. Mm-hmm. And and there's that tension because she's taking care of the home while he's at the Congress forming this new nation.
Yep.
And that's what's supposed to be. But in a lot of ways, we've twisted it. Mr. Charlie, your thoughts on The View?
Well, I don't have a lot of respect for the women on The View, but the one thing before I comment any further on that, you should take a look at the whole clip. There are some other things that are said that are extremely disheartening. And the whole thing was, I want to build on what Steve said a moment ago, and that is this, that when you talk about a relationship, there's really an importance of giving. Mm. And when the women on The View were speaking, they were doing it from the perspective of taking. They're takers. Well, when I was coaching basketball, we would talk about energy givers and energy takers. They are takers. They are totally selfish in what they're talking about there. Joy Behar nailed it. She was adequately showing what Anna Navarro really thinks of men. They're slaves. That's what we've allowed to creep into our culture. And so, women, if you really feel that way, if you really feel that men should be slaves, you might want to take a look at what's going on in our society. You might very well be part of the problem. And I don't think it's good as men to allow themselves to be spoken of that way. If I was the husband of any one of those women that made those comments, there would be a discussion at home. That unequivocally, there would be a discussion and there'd be a straightening out. But something tells me those women really run the home well.
Those men have been cucked.
And yes, they have.
It's a dirty word. I understand it, but that's what men are expected to do that now.
Yep.
Now, don't get me wrong. Both sexes are often capable or are fully capable and are often at some level of fault.
Yep.
But we talked about boundaries. But I kind of want to go into the more modern view of feminism because we talked about how biblically God had been elevating women. Throughout history, you know, men tend to, and by the way, this is just in general, people tend to co-locate an ally and then they'll elevate one group over the other. The strongest group will sort of prevail in the struggle for a patriarchy, matriarchy, white versus black, whatever. You're going to find that that is very common. God, on the other hand, has always been about leveling the value of the sexes, the races across the board. Mm-hmm. So I want to take this out of the distant past and let's bring it into the near past, into the 1800s, 1700s, 1800s. We had the foundation of this nation. Mm-hmm. And Miss Nikki, you and I were talking about this. Abigail Adams, again, to reference her, I mean, I think she was a very, very influential part of the founding of our nation, and we don't really hear too much about that, but she influenced her husband.
I think that any history that talks about Abigail and Adams, it does show that her and her husband were very close, and he did listen to her a lot.
I just think that's common. I think that should be common. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of relationship, yes, because you are companions. And if you two are working together to build each other up, they had a lot of intellectual common ground.
You just said the key phrase, build each other up.
Yes. And so when he's in Congress, I love the statement that she made was, remember the ladies, remember the ladies. And I think she was just making sure, she probably saw in her own life that sometimes women were forgotten or not held up to the same standard of value that they should be.
Well, and that's something that we ultimately see kind of an interesting split in how the states dealt with property ownership. Because if you look in the Bible, women absolutely could buy property and own property. Now, there was an ancestral delineation of the land. All land reverted, and there was an exchange in Israel at the year Jubilee. Every 49 years, there would be a time where you could buy and sell. And on the 50th year, all land was effectively returned to its ancestral heritage. That was a thing in Israel. But women could buy land and mm-hmm. sell land and own things. That was biblical. But we saw that as you have this sort of Greco-Roman influence on the West, in addition to the Judaic influence on the West, you see the Greco-Roman influence kind of come in. And in some ways, and then the Anglo and the Saxon, right, you see that women kind of got demoted. And certain states reflected that, didn't they?
Yes. Certain states had different laws for women and owning property and voting. In some states, a widowed woman who owned land that her and her husband had attained, they would allow her to vote because it affected her property. A woman who was married, they did not let her vote. But we have to understand the mindset of the day was that bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, you're one with your husband, so the both of you should be in agreement of how you're going to vote, so you only need one vote. We don't look at it that way today, but back then it did. Another thing is women owning property, married women owning property. Now, one thing I did not look into is, could a woman purchase property, but it could not be in her name? It had to be under her husband's name. I don't know that, so I'd have to look deeper into that. But that, again, would fall under we're one in the eyes of God. So what you have, I have, you know, and our family name is this. You left your father and your mother. Now you are one with me, and this is our family name, and this is our home. But I do feel that there was a lot of discrimination in America, and it was – men said, well, that the Bible this, Bible that.
The farther south you went, the more into Democrat territory you went, mm-hmm. the more you would see that representation. Yeah. And they said the same about the blacks, didn't they?
Yes. As a matter of fact, when you, Elizabeth Canton, when they realized, you know, because Douglas, the black ex-slave that.
Frederick Douglass.
Frederick Douglass.
There you go. When she realized that the black men were going to get to vote before a white educated woman, she came off pretty angry.
And she was a Democrat as well.
But she said a lot of, you know,
good things.
She said a lot of negative things about.
Well, about black men. But yeah.
Her point was, how could Frederick Douglass get the option to vote who cannot even compose a sentence, and I'm an educated white woman.
Frederick Douglass composed many a sentence,
yep,
very eloquently. Very it would much. Be like saying Thomas Sowell can't. Oh, sorry.
But, and I just read that somewhere. So, you know, they were together, and then when she realized the law was going to pass for him and not for her, you know, she had some ugly things to say. But
and again, you see that Democrat influence. Look, it's Democrat, Republican, why do you have to make it? Okay. One party fought for states' rights exclusively for the purpose of, by the way, I'm a big believer in states' rights. Okay. I'm a super federalist. Okay. Mm-hmm. And a federalist is someone who believes in delocalizing the federal, which is kind of, and the anti-federalist is they want to consolidate the power in the federal. I'm super in favor of the federalist mindset where the states have their rights. But the reason why the Democratic Party really pushed it, and I think, you know, sometimes we kind of get off the rails. We say it was about states' rights. Civil War was about states' rights. It was to do what? Hold slaves. Yep. Just like today, states' rights, whenever it comes up. Why? To continue promoting abortion. So, and it's the same people. It's the same people. They only want states' rights when they can put someone under their thumb.
You know what? I want state rights to protect my border.
I want states' rights to protect my border. But as soon as we say this is actually a state issue and not a moral issue, this is our state's border, this is our state's economy. No. You can't do that. The federal has to have the legislative priority. But, you know, we can own our slaves and we can kill babies in utero. That's a state's right issue. It's not a moral issue. Your state's border, on the other hand, is a federal issue somehow. Anyway, just I digress.
That's a moral issue. Don't you understand that?
Exactly. So you've got this issue of the church ultimately getting perverted to push an agenda, because you'll have people that, and you go back and you'll see in a lot of sermons, I will not have a woman teach. A woman must submit to man. It's like, but you, that verse was written in a chapter, and that chapter was written in a book to a specific set of people at a specific time. And those people were doing certain things that were wrong, and there was dysfunction in the family, and the men were not looking out for the women, and the women were rebelling against the order of the family. And it, by the way, when a man doesn't take care of his wife and his kids, he is rebelling against the order of the family. I'm going to say that too.
Yep.
Just putting it out there. But Melissa, I know you have thoughts on the whole suffrage movement and on kind of the way that we kind of see the downstream of it all has been not necessarily what a lot of people would have expected it to be.
I don't think it is, because, you know, I think initially when we wanted the women's rights, we wanted to be treated as an equal. And in and of itself, that's not a bad thing. It's when you step outside the biblical boundaries of what is equal and what my role is and what I should be doing as a woman versus what you should be doing as a man. That's where we have issues. I mean, it doesn't jive.
And, you know, Charlie and I talked about this on the way over here. I was married very young. Okay. So I was 18 when I got married, 19 when I had my first child. But you're a single woman. So and this is what I was telling Charlie. I said, if my daughter was unmarried, I would want her to have every opportunity available to her to do what she wanted to do. I wouldn't want there to be laws to say, well, you have to live with mom and dad. You can't live on your own. You can't vote. You can't go to school. You can't do these things that you want to do. I would be really upset about that.
Well, by the way, I don't think there were any laws except for the voting. The voting, you had to own property to vote.
Yes.
And you had to be draftable to vote. So, you know, in 1914 or 15, would there be any reason why you wouldn't want the vote? Would there be a reason why women didn't want to have the vote? There were a lot of women who opposed the suffrage movement. World War I. Yes, Mr. Producer, World War I. A really good reason to not want the vote. And there's a lot of women that did not want the vote because they knew that the rational conclusion is that once you start to vote, you need to be held responsible for the policies that affect international relations.
And that's a problem, because if I'm voting, even today when suffrage, when I don't have to worry about being drafted, you know, given, you know, my sex or my age, that should be something that I should want to do. If I'm wanting to promote myself and my patriotic responsibilities to vote, that comes with a lot of other territories as well. That
you got to make that decision.
Yeah, like if I want to vote, I better be ready to stand in arms for my country. I can't have one way or another.
You have all these women who say, "No, I don't want to be drafted, but I want to vote." And you look at, and again, I'm just saying, I'm just saying, I'm not advocating for the, you know, removal of the amendment allowing women to vote. I'm not saying that. But you have us closer than ever to World War III, and who voted for the imbecile in the occupying the White House right now? Overwhelmingly, the demographic was white suburban women. Overwhelmingly, that is the largest demographic.
Did they have colored hair?
Most of them.
Do you know, I really, because I'm going to say something that's going to really upset a lot of people.
Ruffle those feathers.
I'm going to ruffle some feathers.
Ruffle.
When we're voting for people who are going to run our country. And if we're voting in federal elections of people who are handling our federal tax dollars, you need to be a contributor to those tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not contributing, like I'm talking about people,
welfare
people who have never worked. If you've been without work for 2 years and you're a healthy individual, you don't get to vote. You have to earn that right. If you're retired, you've already earned it. If you're disabled, that's a different story.
Right.
But if you're just on welfare because you haven't got the gumption to go out and get a job, why should you have any say?
What about illegal migrants?
Well, you're not a citizen. Come on.
How do you vote if you're not actually a citizen of the nation?
That's right. That's like saying,
well, that's
hey,
what
I can't
the proposal's
vote.
Supposed to be,
I
right?
I know.
I'm a registered Republican. Can I go to a Democratic primary?
Am I using the right
it's illegal.
Keywords? Migrant? Is that what they're using now, or is it refugee now?
I have no idea.
If I'm a refugee from another country and I'm voting in a different country, that's not how voting works.
Well, it doesn't matter. They're Democrats.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
I know.
Come on, John Arthur.
I know. So, so just moving through, though, well, one of the things that I think we've and Steve, I know that you're going to have an opinion probably that's going to be a little bit at odds with some in here. When it comes to voting and drafting, you know, there's a debate. Should women be responsible to be drafted? Should we have women in war?
To a degree. Yeah, I think so.
I thought you were going to say no.
Well,
that's interesting.
To a degree.
Okay. Elaborate. Okay.
And my elaboration is not in war, but in other aspects of the military.
So you're saying not in the front line.
Like
correct.
Not combat. Like
nursing. And I'm not talking about actually where the bullets fly and all of that. There are places in the military that women can serve.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the lines.
In non-combatant roles.
In non-combatting roles, exactly. Mm-hmm. There are places in the States, there are places in other countries where, camps are set up that they are not in combat areas and places where shipping goes on and all of that goes on and getting supplies out and all of this, you know, those types of roles can be filled with women and they're good at logistics.
Supply roles.
Exactly.
And supply and demand. And medical roles still suffer heavy casualties in war.
On the back lines, not in the front lines.
Especially now, though, they also still suffer heavy casualties during war. In modern war, you only have to be 200, 300 miles away from target to be able to grease an entire MASH unit that is on a different line of the map. It's behind
right.
a different – it's on in a different country. And you can have Exocet missiles that have a 200-something mile range. They're ship-launched missiles. And you can absolutely wipe out a MASH unit that's 200 miles beyond the front. So I have an unpopular opinion. I think that by and large, women shouldn't be in the military. And here's why. I think that women, especially non-combatants, I agree with you. I am reticent to have them in field hospitals as well. I'm okay with people working in factories. I'm okay with working whatever. But it used to be in even the Nazis would not destroy. There were exceptions, but those were court-martialed. They would not kill the women and the children when they came into a town. There used to be a decorum among Western nations. We lost a lot of this when we started fighting in the East, okay, because they don't have that Judeo-Christian
value. They have no decorum.
None.
But we used to have a value structure in the West where women and children were left alone. We are losing that every time we put a woman in a combatant role or in a near field operation role. And that's where you get to the place where you go from having this women and children first mentality to absolute destruction. I think putting women into field hospitals is a regression back to the more barbaric biblical times where you would glass a city effectively and you would just destroy everything. You know, they didn't have modern weapons. They weren't bombs, but they would spear every single pregnant woman and non-pregnant and all the kids. They would decapitate them in horrible ways so that everyone could see when they came back that this is what happens when you cross us. We're headed back to that.
Well, we can see that with Hamas and when they invaded Israel, what they did to
everybody.
Yeah, whole families.
And the West is degrading to that. And by the way, some of you who are super, super pro Hamas, let's say you're pro Gaza. Okay, let's say you're not pro Hamas. Let me give you the benefit of the doubt. The Jews are specifically wiping out military targets where you have women and children in case because you don't understand how warfare works in the East, in the Middle East and the Far East. The military and their women and children are in the same. You're still coming from this Judeo-Christian perspective of you're the French and British and English marching into Germany. You minimize civilian casualties. You minimize those. The Jews are doing that. The Israelis are trying to minimize the human casualty. But you're fighting against an ancient mindset where they are intentionally hiding because they are one. The men, the women, and the children are all part of the ideology. And so that's where I think we're headed towards that. The more women we put into frontline combat roles, the further we are getting towards that mentality, and we will devalue and degrade life. That's just my two cents.
And I'm coming from like a little bit of a different perspective on it, but I definitely agree with both of you guys. But whenever you look on women and the military, the standards of me getting into the military, because I've tried on two occasions to do this, and it kind of backfired, you know, both times, which I'm kind of, you know, it led me to other opportunities. But my level of my physical fitness standards are completely different from yours. So in a combat setting, if you go down, I'm going to have to rely. I'm going to have to carry you. I can't do that. But then it's also you take, because they want those quotas of X amount of women in the military versus how many men. So now we're degrading the men's standards to meet the female standards. So we're creating a weaker military. So whenever the Middle East and the Far East and China and all these other countries are going to eventually attack us, we have the worst military strength-wise to be able to defend against these other countries who are having a strong male presence.
Yeah. And like Mr. Charlie says, and I want to hand this over to him, we're not saying that you can't be in the military, you can't be a firefighter, you can't be an EMT if you're a woman. We're not saying that, but we're saying don't lower the standard.
Yeah. If I'm going to do it, I have to compete to the male standard.
Correct. And if we're going to allow women into the draft, and if we're going to draft women, we're going to be in that business at all, which I am by principle against, for all the reasons thereof, I think that we're sliding further and further back into a more barbaristic state where even the West is going to kill each other's women and children in conflicts. But even – so let's put that aside and let's just say, going to Mr. Charlie's point, if you are an extraordinary woman and you're able to meet the requirements, God bless you.
Mm-hmm.
But if not
– then you can't. I mean, it's okay. Women and men have different roles. And it doesn't mean that you don't have value. If a woman can't do the same thing as a man, that doesn't mean she's less valuable. She's different. Her makeup is different. And those are good. You know, there's things that women can do that men can't. There are things that men do that women can't. That doesn't mean anything other than they're different. Mm-hmm. It's plain and simple. And, you know, for me, when I think about, you know, you were talking about attacking men or women and children. Israel is faced with a very difficult situation because women and children, and by the way, the U.S. was as well in the war in Iraq. They were using kids.
Yes.
Now, how would you like to be a soldier looking down the barrel of a gun and every bit of you says, don't kill that 7-year-old? And you've got a choice to make because you either do it or your unit gets wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a problem. Mm-hmm. So I do agree with John Arthur's point. We don't want to be killing women and children. But the East does not look at this same way. It's radically different. And that really goes to how women are looked at today in our cultures. They are looked at very differently. For those in the U.S., for you women in the U.S.
Pull up that clip of the Taliban, Mr. Producer.
For those of you women in the U.S. that think that America is so horrible toward the treatment of women, you need to wake up, if I could put this so bluntly, and you need to look at what is going on around the world in the treatment of women. Women are treated given a whole lot more rights and treated a whole lot better in the U.S. than there. I'm not saying it's perfect. Do not accuse me of saying that women are treated perfectly in the U.S. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that for all the moaning and groaning that can be done, we need to weigh that in context with what freedoms and liberalities you do have.
Case in point, to send a message to the West, we're actually seeing the Taliban make some interesting threats. Taliban vows to publicly stone women to death in direct message to Western democracies. So just go and scroll down there just so people can see. If you're online, by the way, link in the description, as always, to this story. Mr. Charlie, did you want to play the video?
It's okay. Just an article, but I will say this is kind of a poke in the eye of the Western world. And this is exactly to what I'm talking about. In the East, you can just merely bring up an accusation against a woman. Well, they have the court systems. No, they don't. No, they don't.
No, they do. But the question is, do you live in a free nation? The answer to that question is, do you have laws and are they applied equally?
And they're not.
Keep going.
And that is where if I were in the Middle East and I had a family and I had a daughter, I would be petrified.
Yeah.
I would absolutely be petrified. You're talking about a person that has to walk on eggshells to make it through life. To make it through life. Oh, you want to look forward to marriage? Wait until hubby gets upset about one thing. Maybe you didn't do as he wanted you to do that one day. Maybe you didn't say the right thing to honor his position, if you will, that one day. All it takes is one accusation to the proper people of that community, and your daughter is fixing to be stoned to death.
And the question is not why is that the case in the Middle East. The question is, why is it not that way in Western countries? That's the question that should be asked, because it's very abnormal.
Well, and that's where you're going to go back to the Bible, because in our foundation of our country, we had some bad biblical views, but we had some good biblical views, and that kind of stuff was not embraced in the Western culture to flog a woman publicly, to stone a woman publicly. She didn't have to walk five steps behind her husband and keep herself covered in a burqa. And
So I mean, to that point, what is the group of people that is really esteemed properly the place of a woman? It started with Jesus.
Yes, and I was glad you got to that, because Jesus really did elevate women a great deal in his ministry and in his resurrection. People don't understand that. Women were a core after the resurrection in the ministries as the men, Paul and them, were traveling. It was the backbone of the women that kept things going in a town. I remember Paul went to one town and he went to the river because that's where the Christians were meeting, and a woman was leading that. So the women that gave testimony at the resurrection, when they were at the tomb, he used the testimony of women. And at that time, women did not, they weren't allowed to testify in court or anything.
There was
like
no
that.
Value to their testimony.
Right. And so he really elevated women in the woman caught in adultery. The
woman
rule
at the
was
well.
The woman at the well. I mean, just so many things.
I think the woman at the well, as a matter of fact, little plug for the next episode of the podcast, The Chosen. I think one of the most interesting scenes that they did was the woman at the well.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really well done. And I think it showed the dynamic that was just, you can clearly see what the culture was at that time as it pertained to men interacting with women. I mean, here's the woman at the well, and Jesus is asking her a question, and she's like, who are you to be talking to me? That's in the Pomeroy paraphrase, by the way. Who are you to be talking to me? What are you doing here? You shouldn't even be here. And, obviously he was there for her. But isn't it interesting how she dealt with her sin? And it was beautiful. Jesus was saying, you have just as much value as a sinner as a man does as a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
I can forgive you just as much as I can a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Christianity as a whole has done more for the cause of women than probably we realize. And now, that's not to say the local New Testament church hasn't screwed it up. They have. But in terms of the freedoms that women have, I think you can point to Christianity as a major reason.
And I believe it's John 4:7, I believe, that whenever, the disciples came back to where Jesus was talking to a bunch of women, and the disciples were like, they didn't ask questions. And that was, I believe, like kind of one of the first instances of them saying, hey, you know what, if Jesus says it's good for us to treat women as equals, we're going to treat women as equals.
It's really a good thing there.
So, again, when it comes to anthropology, I think one of the most important questions is not, why are people violent? Why are they vile? Why are they evil? We know why. That's nature. The question is always, why is there mercy? Why is there grace? Grace and mercy are a very new concept. And if you believe in the social contract, you really should see regimes much more like 1940s Germany, like Stalinist Russia, like Maoist China. The fact that there is an America that is flawed, because it's still human, but there are people who actually say, wait a minute, it's not fair for XYZ. We want to protect women and children. The fact that the Brits, that there was even any resistance to the way that they treated the colonies in Africa, okay? The fact that there are people who were held accountable, some people were held accountable for that, okay? That is unusual. What is the difference? And it really comes back to Christ. It all comes back in. So when you want to look at men versus women and the current controversy and the current culture, one of the things that I think is just so critical that we not miss is we as humans can mess up God's word.
Mm.
And the church got this backwards.
Yeah.
With bad exegesis, for those of you who don't know, an exegesis is you are exegeting, you're taking out of the scripture, you're saying, what was the intent? What was the meaning? I'm going to pull this out. An eisegesis is, I said, Jesus said. No, okay. But an eisegesis is your inference, your superimposure of your will upon that. We had a lot of bad actors over the years, and we didn't execute church discipline. We had people in the South who would push views on, you know, other races, on women, that were abiblical. They were unbiblical. They were outside of the Bible. And that's when man comes in, or a woman, I'm just saying, it doesn't matter, comes in and puts they use the Bible as a cudgel.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you actually look at the Bible, Jesus was about elevating women. He was about elevating the sinner. He was about, and not in their sin, but as someone who could be reborn into a new creation, man or woman. So I think that one of the most frustrating things about today is we have this kernel of truth that we need to debunk. Yes, there was a patriarchy, but it's so much more than that. A lot of it was put in. By the way, a lot of things that are attributed to the patriarchy, women's beauty standards, is that men or is that women?
Ooh. Ooh. There's a good question.
I have never talked to a woman and put tutorials on how to do the winged eyebrow lash makeup, to, you know, the most recent thing. You know, if it wasn't for Brett Cooper over at the Daily Wire, I wouldn't know what clean girl aesthetic versus mafia girl aesthetic are, okay? Just because people are like, there are all these things that girls have to go and empty their closets and they have to buy the clean girl vibe. This is what I've been told. Okay. This is what I've been told. It's like,
I was wondering how you found this out.
So
I'm glad
on
to
the
know
Daily Wire
that you, this,
yes. So on told the Daily Wire, okay, there's a great host. Her name's Brett Cooper. She's their Gen Z host. And in between all of watching, you know, Matt Walsh, Andrew Clavin, and Michael Knowles, you know, Brett Cooper comes up too. And apparently these girls will empty their closets because some girl on TikTok or Instagram changes, says, well, now it's the mob wife age, and so now they have to throw out all of their nice leggings and their nice cardigans, and they have to buy wool and big boots. It's the mob boss era, and they change.
We've done that for years because, you know, as
thank you.
It's like, as fads have changed, we've done it to ourselves for, you know, since I was a little kid. I'm like, you know, I cleaned out my closet to go through the whole JNCO pants stage. Yes, I wore the JNCO pants. But I'm like, we've done that for years. You know, some person that we think is important says one thing, and then we all change how we are until the next person comes along.
So that's often attributed to the patriarchy. I'm just going to say, I don't think that's...
Of course it is.
There's a lot of stuff that's our fault, okay, that this guy's fault. I don't think that one is. I think that one's on you ladies.
That's on us.
News to you, John Arthur.
Right.
It's always the man's fault.
I think it is, but that's a different story.
He's never been married, has he, Steve?
Yep. Never.
Nope.
He'll learn.
We're having too much fun.
You're in trouble, Mr.
He'll
Powell.
Learn. He'll
You're
learn.
In trouble. So
he'll learn.
Just kind of wrapping up.
Ain't that right, guys? He'll learn.
Wrapping up for the day.
Comments down in the comment section about whether or not John Arthur will learn or not. And when he gets married.
This is why we love Steve. He's unhinged.
And politically incorrect. Thank you very much.
Very much so. So wrapping up for the day, Miss Nikki. Thoughts on that? Is a lot of mic noise. You're good.
Thank you.
You can leave it.
I was.
You can leave it alone.
Trying there.
He likes touching his mic. You know.
That's a
thank you. No,
that does not work as a guitar.
No. Oh,
it's not a guitar. Miss Nikki.
Did that sound okay, Raga?
Can you be our ballast for a moment and return us back to the subject?
Okay. Sure.
Wrapping up for the day. Final thoughts.
Have to get.
Well, I would just say that there's a lot of things that we haven't even addressed yet in New Testament.
a lot of our laws that changed toward in the 1970s for women and working and some additional rights that happened, that was just 50 years ago. We haven't even addressed women in biblical roles of authority within the church. We haven't addressed those. So there's a lot of, well, biblically, the main question today is, can a woman preach? Because that's a big controversy within the church today. Can a woman preach? A woman can teach. We can go to Priscilla and Aquila. Paul emphasized both of them together. It was like they had a partnership, okay? I'm going to say a woman cannot have top authority within a church, and I'm going to tell you why. Not because she's weaker, not the weaker vessel, not because she's stupid. It's spiritual warfare. And without the covering of a man, she is open to spiritual warfare in a way that, can she handle it? Possibly, but she wasn't designed to handle it without a man. You know, Charlie and I teach a Sunday school class, and there are times I teach and sometimes that he teaches. If he were to die, I would not run that class on my own. I would really believe that we needed a man's presence in that class. So when you're talking spiritual things of a placement of a woman, I'm following biblical principles because people are not looking at the spiritual warfare that's out there. They're only looking at position and intelligence, and that's not the way God looks at it.
Well, you're pulling that partly out of some of the key principles out of that from the account of Deborah, out of Judges, aren't you?
Well, some of it, yes. But, I mean, you just have to have – when you look at the Bible and if you're looking at it with a carnal mind, you're screwed up. If you can't see the spiritual part behind it, you're never going to see it right.
Yes, and the interesting part about Deborah was that – so, by the way, prophetess, teacher, leader of the children of Israel. She was a judge, okay? So, and she was very, very much – attributed righteousness for her faith in God and in also everything that she did that flowed out of that faith. But you look at that situation, you have a passive man, Barak. He's the general of the armies of Israel. And he says, look, unless you go, I'm not going to go. So what you have there is you have a weak man.
Really weak.
You have a weak man. And you have a strong woman. But even she goes, look, I'm going to come up behind you and I'm going to help you and I'm going to lead this with you. But because you're not willing and able, men, don't do that to your
Amen.
Men.
Amen.
Do not be that right man. On. Barak is not a good role model for men. And because he was such a poor performer in his way, you know, Deborah says, look, you know, I'm going to go with you. Sisera, the enemy king, is going to be destroyed. But you know what? You're not going to get him. Mm-hmm. In fact, a woman's going to get him. And guess what? Jael, this woman of God who is smart, savvy, she's prepared. She takes care of the enemy general. That is something that I think is to be glorified. I think we need to really say, look, women, you need to be that kind of woman. Yeah. But men, you've got to step up to your role as well. Like the reason you have strong women in a lot of cases is because you have passive men. And those women had to become stronger.
They were forced into it.
They had to become stronger. That is never a good thing for men. It's a referendum on men. On weak men, not just physically weak, but spiritually weak men. That's why we have this rise of feminism, because we have all these men who would not read their Bibles. They would not take care.
That's true.
And they instead, they just took parts out of the Bible and perverted it.
But I would say, just in addition to that, we're not saying that a woman can't be strong if she's not forced into it. She can be and should strive to be.
It should be glorified. That's what I was saying.
Yeah. But I mean, if it hadn't been for Barak handling things the way that he did, Deborah wouldn't have been put in that position. And, you know, praise the Lord, she was. She was ready for it.
Statistically, women would rather stay home. That's not all women. Statistically, 80 to 90% of women, depending upon whose polls you're looking at, would rather stay home with the kids and raise the family, provide the home and the hearth. That's statistics.
Mm-hmm.
What you see is a world where men have become so weak because of the good times that it's now necessary. And that part of that has to do with the Federal Reserve and the way that we're handling finances and the way we're printing money. And we've created this whole mess. Okay. Men have become weak. And now you're seeing this rise of strong women. Part of it's a Jezebel spirit, but part of it is a direct relation to how weak we have been as men. So I think men need to step up and we need to be better men. And also women, maybe don't mock the other sex and we won't mock you.
Wow.
Maybe we have a ceasefire and a reconciliation of the sexes.
Yeah.
Melissa.
And I like to compare, like, whatever the Bible says about this is how God, man, and woman in a marriage. And I can also relate that and apply that to the workplace as well. So, like, the company that I work for, we have a male CEO. And I don't know his faith, but with his actions, I can pretty well guess what side he leans on. Because I know he respects his wife, he respects his children, and just from what I've seen on the personal side, it kind of works how it should. And he applies that to the workplace. So he has that same, not the same love and respect as he would his wife, but that love and respect to the women that he works for. And in return, the women have that respect and, you know, professional love right back up to him. So the successful hierarchy in the marriage can also work in the workplace as well. And I've seen that with the company that I work for, and it is pretty much one of the best workplaces I've ever been in, because you have that.
There's a word for what you just described. We used to call that chivalry. We used to call that chivalry, where men respected women and women respected men. And no, you don't need the door open for you. No, you don't need the umbrella. You know why you say yes? Because the guy is trying to honor you. It's not because you're less. By the way, I almost forgot to say, the weaker vessel, what's that word in the Greek? Do you remember?
I don't know. I can't remember.
So the word, because she is the weaker vessel, that is the same Greek word that would have been used for fine china, just as, or the finer cup or the finer jar that you would have brought out for company. You do that because she is the finer, the refined version, whereas the man is the work-hardened, that durable thing. This is the finer vessel.
And it's referring to not just physical strength, but emotions too, because a woman is nurturing toward children more so than what a man is.
It's a thing of beauty.
Yes.
The word, the weaker vessel, and maybe that is a
chauvinistic
lack of no.
I don't find it chauvinistic.
I was going to say a misleading translation with the current linguistics that we have, but you got to remember that some of these translations are, you know, a couple hundred years old,
yeah.
400 years old, some of them, and language does change. But the purpose, and this is why you really need to study your Bible. You really need to study in the Greek and the Hebrew. But if you're looking at what the original word was used, was that finer china. You're doing this because she is the finer, she's the refined, the beautiful, the extra special vessel for the Spirit. And I think it's something we miss out on. Steve, final words on the day as far as value of women, men, the whole cultural landscape.
Yeah, I think, you know, like we've been talking and adding on to some of the words that been talked about is that, you know, women and men each have various specific roles, and women do their specific roles very, very well because they were designed by God for those specific roles. Motherhood, for instance.
Amen.
Men. Protection, for one. designed by God. Protect the home and the family. And then that's, and that is children and his wife. Now, men take this very, very serious, just like women take their job very, very serious. Just like Charlie had talked about when he was upping his talk about Nikki to these men at work and saying what her job is, which is very true for a woman that works as a home mom, stay-at-home mom. There's a lot of things that are involved in that kind of job.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a job. Just like there's a lot involved when Charlie would go off to work. A lot of things involved in what he specifically did. Just like what he does now. There are things that a lot of women wouldn't want to do with the job that he has. There's a lot of men that would not want to stay home. Because it's not ingrained in them. Now they're, you know, goes both ways. But the thing is that men and women from the beginning, from the Garden of Eden, were designed for specific jobs. And we were not designed to be crossovers where men are women and women are men.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't happen that way, and it's not designed to be that way.
You can try, but you'll fail miserably.
Mm. Miserably.
Sorry, Dylan. Moving over to Mr. Charlie.
Yeah,
speak to the value that God really has bestowed upon women and where we kind of have lost that.
I think when you look at Proverbs 31, I think that's probably one of the clearest examples. This is a woman that's a thinker. She's a doer. She's a thinker. And she's got things in order. You know, that's why sometimes it probably is good to have women up toward the top in a company. Why? They think pretty well. They can do well in those areas. They can think about things that a man might not typically. Men think about conquering. That's what they're about. Let me run over you. I'm gonna get it. Women have that compassionate side, and they can think about things. But I think for me, when it comes to the value in what God has shown, God took and made woman out of the side of man. Not the front, not the back, out of the side. And when I think about the role of a woman in a relationship, in a marriage relationship, I think about the word used for the Holy Spirit, a paraclete. One who walks alongside. I want my wife to walk alongside me. I want her to work with me. I want her and I to make these decisions together. Now, is there a point at which the man needs to step up and make a decision? Very well could be. And God has made it very clear what the woman should do in that particular situation. But men, don't try to take advantage of a situation like that. That's not what you want. You want to make those decisions together, the tough ones. I'm not going to go out and buy some lavish thing, whatever it might be, no matter the intentions. If I want, would I like to put my wife in a $250,000 house that's really nice? Yes. I'm not going to go out and do that, even if I have the money. I'm not going to go out and do that without her input. It's not happening. I want to use one more illustration on this. I did 21 plus years of prison ministry. For a while, I was doing it on a weekly basis, and sometimes only once a month. But it was just short term. It wasn't it wasn't a full-time, full day up at the prison. I would go for a couple hours, come home. For a while, when I was going once a month, Nikki knew that I wanted to do this on a full-time basis. And we had 5 kids at home. That's a rough day at the office on a Sunday. And one day she sat there and she says, I'm ready for you to go. And I'm like, I'm being kicked out? No, that wasn't it. What she was saying was, I'm ready for you to be able to go and do what the Lord has placed on your heart. And I did 21 plus years of prison ministry. And it was it was a blessing. It was very good for me. I needed it as much as those men might have gotten out of it. But if it had not been for Nikki stepping up and saying, you need to do that, I don't think I would have done that full time. So I think the role, the value of a woman, biblically speaking, is very large. We talked about some of those women in the Old Testament, the Ruth, the Deborah, Esther, those are great examples. The Priscillas, the Aquilas, the Marys and Marthas, these are great examples of women. And women, you're not subhuman. You're not the leader. You should be walking alongside your husband. For those of you that are not married, do what that Proverbs 31 woman is doing. Study that out, and you will see what God wants out of a woman.
Amen. If you were blessed by this podcast, like, comment, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. Thank you so much for hundreds of thousands of downloads of the audio. YouTube still acting weird. Hit that notification bell, and that way you don't miss another notification of a drop of the episode. If you are on Rumble, thank you so much for being on Rumble. And with that said, that's slowly growing. We are on the X. We're not as active as we used to be. We're going to go ahead and get that rebooted. We love you so much. You have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Bye bye. Thank you.
All right. Oh. Favorite family activity.
I thought you were going to do a different one.
Family activity. Which one did you want me to do?
I was going to say we should comment on the one woman that we believe has impacted the world the most.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Very March of you, although this is debuting in April, but we're doing this in March. That's fine. So a woman who's impacted the world the most, for better or for worse.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is Mother Teresa.
Ah.
Ooh.
That was good. The first person.
Pretty good choice.
I think of Margaret Sanger.
Oh, hey. Well,
didn't have to be for the good, huh?
Yep.
I'm going with someone current, Catherine Middleton.
Hmm. Who's she? Haven't heard.
Princess of Wales.
Ah, Catherine Middleton. Okay. Yeah. Of Middleton.
Hmm. Man, I don't know.
All right. While he's thinking, Charlie and Mr. Producer.
I'm going with Mary, Mother of Jesus.
I knew someone was going to pick it up.
Yeah. I could spend an hour there.
While Steve is humming over there, Mr. Producer. Rai, the producer guy, is always in the chair.
Not too edumacated on my history, but one woman that does come to mind is Elizabeth Elliot.
Ooh. Elizabeth Elliot had a huge impact on the missions.
Wow.
Absolutely. There was a huge regression that could have happened with missions, and Miss Elliot was a huge benefit to that. Speaking about grace and mercy in the loss of her husband to the very people she reached out to. Yeah.
In that ministry, if I'm not mistaken, is still going today.
Steve.
I'd have to also probably go with Margaret Sanger because, man, that was...
What a witch with a B.
Yeah.
That said, tell us the most influential person in history, at least that you think has affected the history of the world, and tell us in the comment section below. Thank you so much. We got nothing else for you. And truth. Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.